You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on all social media at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please, please, please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. We are also on Facebook, facebook.com/clockradiospeakers. We are on Instagram. Doc, do you have the new dark mode Instagram?
I do. I saw you post about it last night, and then I immediately went to the app store, and I was like, wait a minute. Why isn't my Instagram updated yet? Get out of here.
And we in here. So if you want to see Instagram, but in black, you can search us at CRS Podcast. All previous episodes of Clock Radio Speakers are available at clockradiospeakers.com, as well as Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, Google Play, everywhere except you know where and you know why. And clearly Doc is here because I just spoke to him. So what's going on, man?
Everything's good, man. You know, fall is here. I got to be outside on a beautiful Saturday this past weekend to watch my terrible college football team get destroyed at home. But you know, if you're gonna go watch like college football, a 60 degree day in fall is like perfect. So everything's good, man. Life is good. But y'all can follow me if you want on Twitter at @doc_beats. S not a Z, or like Armand said, just follow the show at CRS Podcast. Oh man, what's going on?
Man, the streets are on fire with actually they were on fire. It's like and I know this, you know, talking to you, you went to UConn. So like, what was UConn like maybe like a day or two after y'all won a championship and the riots were over?
Oh man. What was it like?
Yeah. So were the streets like really desolate and there was like smoke in the air? It looked like The Walking Dead.
That's what it looked. Yeah. So like, I think I've told a story in the show before, but if not, I'll tell it now. So in 2004, which was my senior year, the UConn men won the national title. And then the next night, the UConn women won the national title. And on that second night, I actually had to go pick up my brother from the airport because he was flying. He had already pre-scheduled like a quick trip out to UConn because he wanted to see the campus. Like, and since I like lived there, you know, I actually had a spare due to some weirdness with a roommate. We had a spare bed in our suite. So like I had a place for my brother to stay. And a friend of the show, Kelly Bakes, was a freshman at the time at UConn. And she was like, this is, you know, so Kelly was like, yeah, no problem. I'll take your brother to like my English 101 class, you know, to really like give him like the college experience, right? Well, I was like, this is gonna be great. So I had to borrow a friend's car, go to the airport, get back to campus right after the game. And so the night before, like campus was like total riots. Like, you know, we're talking like, you know, huge, like burning, like what, you know, pieces of burning furniture and like cops flying, you know, with helicopters overhead and people getting arrested, like just madness. So after that, you know, the women's team at UConn is much more successful. They're pretty unarguably the most successful college basketball team like ever. Mm-hmm. But you know, even with that being said, let's just say the students rioted much harder for the men than they did the women. So like, I never forget, come back on campus that night. So that the women had just won, pull up on, you know, park my friend's car in the lot I had to, and then walk with my brother back to my dorm room. And we're just walking past, and compared to what I had seen the night before, it didn't even faze me. Plus I was incredibly hungover because we all went a little crazy the night before. So I'm just sort of trudging back. Meanwhile, I'm like not even paying attention because it didn't even faze me. Meanwhile, there's like dumpsters on fire and like stuff everywhere. And my brother's just, he just looks at me, you know, cause he's like 17, you know, still pure in the world. You know what I mean? Like you're so young, you don't know. And he just looks at me and he goes, is this what college is like? And I was like, oh no, 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 this is nothing.
That was nothing.
This is easy. This is light work.
Well, it seems like that's what hip hop is right now.
A little bit, you know, everybody was okay. Everyone was like, all right, we're going to get Kanye. Then it's like, oh, okay, it's delayed, but you know, this is Kanye. It's always a work in progress. But like, Here we are. Like we've now blown past that deadline.
Yeah. No kind. And there's like not a peep.
He did a Sunday service in Salt Lake City.
Yep. Yep. I saw some overhand or some overhead shots. Yeah. It was really, really massive.
Yep. A lot of people showed up.
Yep. Saw there were some quotes. I didn't even bother watching it.
Yeah, you know, it seems like Kanye might be back to watching you know, extreme right wing YouTube clips, which is you know, sad for everybody.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, where we're at in this country is like, it's one thing to be like, I'm not saying Kanye can't believe what he, like, have a difference of opinion that he needs to, like, you know, look like I'm ecstatic that as of today, Elizabeth Warren is now officially, like, leading in the polls for Democratic nominee. Like, that is, like, the best political news of, like, the month for me. Right. I don't need or expect everybody to, like, sort of believe that. But then there's like a line that you can cross when you go, like, so extreme. Also, that's not even extreme. It's more like a line you cross where, like, and YouTube is really good at this. Like, there's no fact checking on YouTube, right? And people have substituted learning from, like, books that are published by publishing companies with editors who might feel a responsibility to, like, being honest. Otherwise, they might get sued, or learning from the news, which you say what you will about the news, but, you know, the old school news at least had a sense of, like, well, we can't, you know, make stuff up or whatever. YouTube is the Wild West, mm-hmm. right? And the YouTube algorithm, the way it rewards videos that push the envelope and get a reaction out of people. So that's what ends up in your feed. So there's all these, like, people have written all these stories, which are, like, now they just feel like normal to me. But, like, I don't know if a lot of people realize this stuff, but it's like, if you start watching one video, if you look over in your sidebar, like, for some people, depending on what you've already watched, you might be, like, 3 or 4 clicks away from being, like, deep into this, like, conspiracy theory / just made up fabrication, like, world of YouTube that is, like, radicalizing young people. It's a crazy world out there.
You know, and I would go a step further and say a lot, like, where we are right now, it seems like fact checking, not just for YouTube, but for a lot of platforms, is kind of secondary. Even in the way that we, like, ingest news or, like, news, whatever's in the caption, that's the story. So it could be, you know, kid jumps into ocean, and, you know, we're just like, oh my God, this kid jumped into the ocean. And then, like, we're not clicking on the link to read the article
that
explains why the kid jumped in the ocean, why it was important, what this means. It's just like, oh, the kid jumped in the ocean. So, like, it's that, it seems like, Doc, to your point, with YouTube becoming like that, it's sort of forced a lot of people to, I don't know if that, like, catch up to that, or that's just a new standard.
Kind of. I mean, for a long, long time, I shouldn't say, like, so, like, if you really want to go back in history, like, there's a long history. It used to be called yellow journalism, right? There's this whole history of super partisan, what we would now call clickbaity type headlines, but except they were in newspapers like 120 years ago, because all people did was read newspapers, right? There's no TV. There's really no radio. There's certainly no internet. So, like, what you had was, in, like, a major city, you'd have, like, a bunch of competing newspapers, and, like, one was known for being super left wing and one was known for being super right wing, and you might have one in the middle. But, like, over time, that sort of consolidated, although you still see, like, elements of that. Like, for a long time, the LA Times was known for being incredibly conservative. The Wall Street Journal is notoriously conservative and pro-business. Like, certain newspapers have certain slants, right? But for a long time, you had a situation where a lot of media was considered to be almost like the way that some, like, old school sports owners would consider their sports teams. Almost like, this is like a jewel that I own, and it sits on a shelf, and I love the prestige that comes from owning the New York Times, or I love the prestige that comes from owning, you know, insert paper of, you know, whatever, right? And that was kind of the case for a long time. And so it was kind of important to have to have a certain standard and to hire the best. And you weren't trying to, like, oh, you know, this is, you know, I need to like get this on the stock market, and I need to get an IPO so I can cash out. So I need to raise my numbers so high that people want to invest money. Like, there really wasn't that kind of relationship between it. It was seen like a long-term asset. You know what I mean? It was a different way of looking at it, but we're not there anymore, right? I think the combination of that, the relationship between news media and business is, I think, just in a terrible place right now. And like something just happened to Sports Illustrated last week, right, where like roughly half the newsroom at Sports Illustrated got fired. They were bought out by this company that is now going to like pump up the Sports Illustrated like content with all of these like independent contributors who get to have their name appear under the Sports Illustrated banner, except they're all responsible for it. It's not going to be vetted. It's not going to have the same level of quality. Like the Sports Illustrated that you and I grew up in the 90s, it's certainly not the same Sports Illustrated that it is now, but like in 5 years, it's going to be a shadow of itself. It's kind of depressing, right? Mm. And they're doing that because they want to get their numbers up so they can sell out why the Sports Illustrated name still means something. It's like a really poisonous way to run business, but like that's what a lot of our business is now, and it's really bad, right? So like that's part of the problem. The other problem is like we used to have something in this country called the Fairness Doctrine, where you had to give like you basically couldn't be too overly biased in media. We had that for a long time in TV media. The Reagan administration tossed that, clearing the way first for right wing radio, so like Rush Limbaugh and all them, which really like helped power the conservative revolution in the 90s. That like that really gave Clinton problem in the 90s, and then of course to like Fox News and other media like that. So it's two separate things that now you inject that with social media, and it's just like, oh man, what do you even do?
Yeah.
Sorry, I went way off the car. I wasn't expecting to go there, but this has been Doc Soapbox.
You just need to bring back, like you tell you, just need to bring back
Plead the Fourth. We're getting to a place where I need another show with somebody so we can dive deep on like politics and business. And
what could we call that?
Mansplaining with Doc underscore B. No, I'm just kidding. Oh.
Whenever I hear that at work, it's a disrespectful term.
Oh.
Like, oh, you're just mansplaining.
Mansplaining happens all the time. I'm guilty. I'm terribly guilty of it. Incredibly guilty of it.
Yeah, but sometimes you're just explaining and you just so happen to be a man.
Sometimes. A lot of times there is a case where it's like, it's like, well, I know something about this, so of course you must want to hear my opinion. And it's like, actually, this has been a hard thing for me to learn. Maybe, this is going to sound revolutionary, maybe everybody doesn't need to hear my opinion all the time.
So isn't that social media in a nutshell?
I mean, it's a good thing I have this podcast so I can get these bars
out. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll talk to Armand on Tuesday. I'll get it out.
Speaking of the intersection between media and news and everything and politics, you want to talk about this Daryl Morey situation?
You know, you sent me something over the weekend and I didn't get a chance to really like dive into it. The only thing I saw was today. There was a Houston Rockets mural somewhere in China, and whoever the mural belonged to was ordered to paint over it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what happened.
All right. So a little while ago, not that long, a couple days or something like that ago, Daryl Morey sent a single tweet that simply said, "Fight for freedom, comma, stand with Hong Kong." So are you aware at all of what's happening with in Hong Kong?
No.
Okay, so there's been like just months and months and months of protests with, I mean, frankly, millions of people out in the streets protesting a controversial bill. So Hong Kong is technically a part of China, but the policy for decades has been like two systems, one country. So Hong Kong gets to be relatively what we might consider Western, which I realize is like a loaded term, but to be more explicit, if you live in Hong Kong, you have, frankly, like more rights, right? You have something much closer to a system of like laws and rules that resemble what you might see in the U.S. as opposed to communist China. This summer, in June, there was a bill that was proposed that would have allowed extradition from Hong Kong to China. So the reason why everyone got really incredibly concerned is basically because that would allow China to arrest political opponents essentially in Hong Kong and bring them to China so that they could quote unquote deal with them, right? Which if you go down that path, you start to see the beginning of the end for like a semi-separate Hong Kong. So like people in Hong Kong like shut down like the airport earlier this summer for a long time.
Oh, that's what that was about. Yeah. I did see video of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the situation in Hong Kong has been real serious for a long time. And frankly, they're like just what we would, I mean, they're like pro-democracy protesters is the best way I could put it. And so by Daryl Morey saying, fight for freedom, comma, stand with Hong Kong, he really stepped in it, basically. To the point where first he was forced to like delete the tweet. Then he had to try to like apologize via Twitter and basically give like a, well, you know, I didn't really, you know, I was uninformed and, you know, I only knew one side of the situation. All the normal sort of like PR sort of spin, right? But this gets even more serious because basically the reason why he felt a need to apologize is because the Chinese, they were not about to stand for this. So they said, we're not going to broadcast or stream NBA preseason games in the country. The NBA's digital partner in China said, nah, we're not going to live stream these games. Like we said, we were going to. The Chinese Basketball Association, which is headed by Yao Ming, said that they would cut ties as well. Like they went all in super quick to basically say, you can't say this. And so there was a story on The Ringer that popped up, I think Sunday night, maybe it was last night. I can't remember. I think it was Sunday night that said, you know, they had sources saying that Daryl Morey's job was in danger because of all this.
Wow.
The NBA right now gets at least 10% of their revenue from China, and their goal, they're sort of on track to eventually get 20% of their revenue from China. It's the biggest growth area of growth for the NBA. And the Rockets in particular, they for a long time they were the most popular team in China, but they're still the second most popular team in China after the Golden State Warriors. They have a lot of fans, they spend a lot of time and money. And so like what's interesting about, like, there's a lot of things that are super interesting about this. Like the way that the NBA initially tried to like apologize, like they had James Harden try to apologize basically on behalf of the Rockets. They sent out a press release that was like kind of mildly worded in English, but the Chinese version was, we'll say, much more critical of Daryl Morey, which people picked up on because it's 2019. You don't think people can use Google Translate? Or better yet, you don't think that you have reporters working for the NBA who can speak both languages? It's kind of a stupid move by the NBA. I think this really caught like a ton of people off guard because they didn't quite recognize, like, number one, how important China is to the NBA, but number two, how really like coordinated Chinese businesses at the highest levels. Like it's like a really, like, all the way, I think a lot of the ways that people probably, some people probably think that like the quote unquote elite in this country work, where it's like a, you know, small group of like super wealthy people like really controlling everything, that's actually kind of how China works, right? Where it's a kleptocracy, it's a relatively small group of very, very rich people who control the government and who control all the major corporations. Like, that is actually the situation in China. So like they can do this sort of like, everybody move quickly now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what I thought, one of the things I thought was interesting about this whole thing is it's the rare situation where really quickly you had sports media, Democrats and Republicans all agreeing on this for different reasons, but all agreeing that the NBA is out of line for doing this. And like, in what world do you have Republicans, Democrats, and sports media ever agreeing on anything?
Yeah.
So like, so here we are. Nobody really knows how this is going to end up. I think the NBA is basically hoping they can just apologize enough to China without having to fire Daryl Morey and without offending anybody else in America. They're trying to like thread that needle. So that's what's going on with Daryl Morey in China.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like whatever my response is, I've said this on the show like another 30 times. Like, I don't know. We just can't expect these corporations to be morally, you know, their number one job is to make money and protect the ways that they make money. So they're trying, like, I get, you know, they're trying to figure out how to kind of appease all parties and smooth it over. But we'll see. I don't know.
I mean, I'm glad you said that because that, honestly, is like, that's the best way to sum up the problem here, right? So I'm gonna, again, man, this whole first side of this episode is turning into Doc on his political platform.
Soapbox Doc.
Soapbox, new nickname. Soapbox Doc. So 20 years ago, China entered the World Trade Organization, and it was a really big deal at the time because it opened up Chinese markets to the US. It really started to set the stage for what we have now, right? Where we have like tons of stuff that is manufactured in China. Like 25 years ago, that was not the case. Mm-hmm. And so part of the theory at the time, And it sounds kind of stupid now, but this is where we were at. Not just this is not a Republican or a Democrat thing. It's really a both thing, which tells you everything you need to know about how terrible the Democratic Party was in the 90s. But the theory was basically, well, if we can open up China to trade, the mere fact that they're like trading with democratic nations means that they're going to eventually modernize and like they will adopt more democratic norms and they'll open up was basically like how people thought that this was going to work. Really one of the dumbest arguments you can possibly think of because nothing of the sort has happened at all, right? Instead, what we now have are like major US corporations terrified of making China mad.
Yeah.
Not exactly what people thought might happen 20 years ago. It's like if you were to take people like in a time machine from 1999 and be like, here's the situation, right? China is now unarguably like the US's biggest sort of contender on the global stage for like supremacy. Much of our manufacturing happens in China. And because they are so tightly coordinated and controlled at the highest levels, they can move quickly anytime any major US company doesn't 100% toe the party line. Like it's not a good place to be in. Not a good place to be in. And like, you know, you pointed out like the NBA's job is to make money and that's, you know, that's true. But like on the other end of the spectrum, like, I don't know, the NBA had no problem, you know, talking about, you know, how much they value, you know, people's opinions and, you know, trying to be right. Like the woke NBA when it, right. You know, racism. Yeah, sure. They'll say all the right things.
Yep.
But, you know, democracy in Hong Kong. Well, hold on just a second.
Things get a little layered. And I think that's, you know, if we're looking at the Botham Jean stuff and just a lot of stuff that's going on now, it's very, in the past, it seems like the narrative was very easy to paint where this happened, the response should be this and the outcome should be this. Where now there are situations that are coming up where like there are multiple truths that exist within a situation. And for people who are thinking very linear, it's really hard for them to grasp that. It can only be this one thing that I see, but it can also be these other things too. So we can talk about wokeness and racism and all that stuff. Yes, that's one layer. But then the second layer, we get to this Chinese democracy and all that stuff. Like that's a whole other situation to unpack. It's just interesting to like watch it unfold for sure.
All right. Speaking of things that are going to be interesting to watch unfold.
Yes.
Your man, big baller Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Does he have a bit of a challenge on his hands with AEW?
No.
Okay, so and that concludes this segment. So I saw some people, because it's Wednesday night. Is it Wednesday night where there's a head-to-head and people are like, oh, the Wednesday night TV wars.
Yes.
And AEW, they beat WWE that first week.
By a lot.
But it wasn't one of the headlines.
No, so NXT is WWE's third brand. So there's Raw, there's SmackDown, then there's NXT. Some people would consider NXT to be like their minor leagues.
Right.
It would be the Raucous Records to, you know, Interscope and Universal. You know, you get a lot of guys that are on Raw and SmackDown now, a lot of guys and girls that are on SmackDown and Raw now got their start in NXT. Usually when you sign from another company, you sign off the street, you'll go through training. NXT, you'll be there for a year, 2 years. You get your gimmick, you learn, you know, the ring. Sometimes if you're an independent wrestler, which they've been signing up, which is what Vince did back in the 80s, snatched up all of the top guys from different territories and put them under one roof and essentially took all the territories out of business. We're kind of seeing that now. So NXT, before a lot of people, the Raw and SmackDown brands are so bad that people default to NXT as being the best out of the three. And to me,
like
it
the
is.
Heads.
What do you mean by the heads?
Like,
oh, the heads. Yeah. Yeah. NXT is for the heads. Yes. Okay. Yes. I believe that the current roster in WWE is the best that they've ever had. And that includes Hogan of the 80s, Stone Cold and The Rock of the 90s, from top to bottom. They have the best talent of like wrestlers, period. Period. But like what happens is you'll get popping on NXT. It's like, okay, so it's Papoose, right? It's Papoose. You get hot on the mixtapes.
You sign your $1.5 million deal with Jive, and then they make you do records with Scott Storch and Snoop Dogg when you get the Raw and SmackDown. It's what happens. You lose everything that people liked about you. And for a lot of people, a lot of wrestlers have not made the best transitions because there's no continuity there. You don't really keep your storylines on NXT to the main roster. So,
oh, wait, they switch it up when you move to the main roster?
For the most part, yeah.
Boy, they really assume a level of like, they either assume that their fans are dumb or so in on the way that wrestling works that they're okay with it.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why people are quote unquote waiting on Vince to either retire, put his focus on the NFL in morbidly in a really like bad way. I've seen a lot of people just say, "Well, I can't wait till Vince dies," because Triple H runs NXT. Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Steven Regal, Fit Finlay, Norman Smiley, like a bunch of, because they'll say like the mid-card guys are the best ones to train you because they're the ones who had to like get over by being talented versus like your Hulk Hogan's who only had 5 moves but got by on like being charismatic and the other stuff.
I'm sorry, did you say Steven Regal?
Yes, I did.
Oh my God.
He's the general manager. He's the Jack Tunney of NXT. He makes all the matches and the wrestlers threaten him and all that stuff. Yeah. So that's what's going up against AEW. And AEW is a organization. God, do I need like really need to break down where that comes from? Okay, so in New Japan, which is like at one point during this time, it was the second most popular wrestling brand. New Japan started what was called the Bullet Club. So the Bullet Club was like this generation's NWO, anti-authority, whatever, whatever. And a lot of those guys, Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, Young Bucks, joined the Bullet Club. And the Bullet Club was started by a guy named Prince Devitt, who now in WWE/NXT, his name is Finn Balor, and AJ Styles, who, if you're under a rock, he's probably the best wrestler in the world right now. Started by those guys along with, you know, cousins of Rikishi and the Samoans and some other guys. Like, it's just a mix of guys. So Cody leaves WWE, joins New Japan, joins the Bullet Club, a couple other guys. They end up breaking off doing their own thing called The Elite. They use YouTube, social media. They're like, they're the ones who got their shirts in Hot Topic. They basically like went indie and like it popped. And so now they got, I believe, the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars to invest a lot of money into AEW. They end up starting an organization, starting a federation, getting the deal with TNT, and now they're back in the wrestling business. And this past Wednesday was the first. They've had a couple of pay-per-views, but this was their first crack at a weekly television show. So when it comes to like head-to-head, I really missed having like picture-in-picture. That would have been great.
Picture-in-picture.
But I ended up just having, I watched NXT on my iPad, and I had AEW on my television. NXT was the better show. Better matches, better storylines. Now, granted, I'm already invested in NXT, so I already know who a lot of the people are.
Right.
My thing about AEW is that all of their guys are people that I already know. And I want them to, instead of focus on being like the competitors to WWF, I just want them to get their own identity. When TNA was popping, TNA was like the alternative because they weren't even thinking about WWE. They had Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and like a lot of young guys who then they were just putting on great wrestling matches. They brought Hogan, they got some money. They brought Hogan in, Bischoff in. Hogan and Bischoff bring in the Nasty Boys and all these other people. And then it becomes a rest haven for WWE has-beens and rejects and old timers and people who got released. And it gets real hokey. And then they end up depleting that company dry. And now, even though TNA makes like a better program, they have like a permanent black eye on them. Like nobody's going to take them serious ever again. And so with AEW, you just have a bunch of old WWE guys and a bunch of like indie guys that I don't really like. They haven't really given me reason to care about them yet. And so you win the first week. And my question is like, how long is that going to last?
Right.
You know, like, are you going to 6 months in? What are the ratings going to be like in another 6 months? That's the big question. So yeah, they won the first week and it was great. And not to say the show was bad. The show wasn't bad at all. It was cool. But I just want to see them playing this out. I want to see where they are in another 6 months. I hope the best for them, because competition only means good things for everybody. And WWE has gone on record saying we consider AEW competition, which was like a super huge rub for them. So, I mean, we'll see.
So what's interesting to me is, like, in 2019, they still wanted to get a, like, cable TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't think, like, what we need is, like, we're going to show everything on YouTube, or let's cut a deal with, like, let's try to see if we can pitch, like, Amazon or something. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. some sort of, like, streaming deal. Because, like, I mean, maybe I'm thinking of this wrong. Like, if it's a new, if it, you know, you're describing AEW the way you are, like, I'm guessing, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, a somewhat decent chunk of their fans probably don't even have a way to get TNT.
Possibly, yeah.
So, like, I guess I don't know if there's been any, if you've read anything or know anything about, like, why go with a cable company now? Because, like, if you're starting from scratch, don't you just go all streaming?
Not necessarily. I would say that TNT, I'm looking at how TNT does other sports. So when it comes to, like, the NBA, they have a pretty decent social media presence. Whatever I don't catch on TV through their network, I'm going to find it on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. So, yeah. and because AEW and the elite guys, like, they got over so well on social media, I think they understand that and they know that. And especially with the first week, like, I mean, they had their women's championship match, one of the competitors is transgender. They have, openly homosexual characters. They have they have all of these things that they could use as tools to, like, go viral, draw more attention, all this other stuff to draw towards the product. So you've got programs like NWA is still a federation, and they just struck a deal with Facebook, and I think they had their first live show yesterday. So there are companies that are doing it, but I think if you're gonna go head up, like, you know, Ted Turner doesn't own TNT anymore, does he? He sold that, right?
I think so.
I think that was the whole reason why WCW went out of business, because they sold it to Time Warner AOL.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we don't want wrestling, because they were losing. I think in 1 year, they went from, like, earning $8 billion or $8 billion or something to, like, losing $40 million in, like, a year.
Yeah, no, TNT is owned by AT&T. AT&T owns Warner.
So there's got to be some fans in there. There's fans and relationships and people who want to capitalize on people like me, people like you who grew up in the late. We were teenagers in the late 90s. We were telling, well, not we were, but we had friends who were telling, you know, their teachers to suck it. And, you know, and every Monday night we were at home flipping the channels. They wanted to bring that back, because we've said this on the show, Doc, nostalgia is big business.
Yeah.
So you're going to get that with all this stuff. But, you know, when that nostalgia wears off, at the end of the day, it's all about the music, in the words of Doc_Beats. Where's the music? Is the program good enough to sustain a long-term audience? And I think you have so many. Here's the other thing. This is where they're going to go, is because you have enough people who hate WWE product. They're already like, AEW is the greatest thing in the world. So you've already got your loyalists.
Right.
But the question is, are you able to make money off of your internet wrestling community? The IWC is the most fickle, like, they're worse than like rap discussions, like fickle, hot 1 minute, wishy-washy the next. Like, they are really, really bad. They'll get behind somebody, and the minute they don't get something that they like, oh, they're on their phones typing feverishly. Used to be on message boards, now it's on Twitter. Like, are those going to be your paying customers? Right now they are, but you kind of have to keep them happy, and it's really hard to keep wishy-washy people happy. So you're gonna have to find some common ground, or some sustainable part of your fan base if you're gonna want to make money, in my opinion.
Okay. That's all I got. So we're yeah. So you basically, it's like kind of wait and see right now. Are they going to screw this up?
Very much so. Wait and see, and really, honestly, like, bro, just enjoy it.
Yeah,
I enjoy it too. It's a good time.
Okay.
What a time.
What a time to be alive. What else is going on? Your man Travis Scott.
Yes.
Talk about rollout. Yeah, a rollout for Highest in the Room.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an album coming? I mean, presumably. This feels like an awfully big rollout for a random one-off single.
Well, he's got some other stuff going on that he's announced.
Yeah.
So his shoes come out this weekend.
Okay.
So there's that. And I think he just announced another Astro World Festival.
He did.
In Houston, right?
He did. Yep.
I mean, you might have an album come behind that, but or you might just have a single to go along with a shoe and a festival.
It's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there's an album coming, but you know, if there is, sure. I can see that. I don't think he needs one right now, but sure, he could do that.
They went all in on like merch bundles and all sorts of stuff for this.
For what, Highest in the Room?
Yeah.
They got merch for Highest in the Room?
They have so much merch for Highest in the Room.
Really?
Yeah, like they did 5 different drops or something like that.
So similar to what Kanye did with the Jesus is King merch.
Yeah, sort of.
Do I need a shop? Okay, I'm looking. Yeah, it's only available. This is one thing I do like that Kanye did not. I'm on his website and there is a timer.
Oh, only that's what I mean. Like, so this stuff is only available for a certain amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I like that.
So he's selling like vinyl. He's selling cassettes. He's got multiple kinds of vinyl. He's got a picture disc. Like I will give Travis credit. He and his team, they execute like really
well.
Really, mm-hmm. really well.
I agree.
When he says stuff comes out, it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Travis is big business now. My goodness.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yeah, Astroworld is November 9th.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, he is. Dang, I need a shop.armandwakeup.com. I'm curious to know how this did. I almost want to buy. Okay, deliver via email. Okay. I just wanted to see how he delivered the digital single.
Oh, I should talk to you offline about some merch. I got something interesting for merch. Anyway.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, so we talked about the merch for a sec. Did you listen to the single?
I did.
What'd you think?
I did. The beat is really... You can't listen to it on your phone.
No.
Yeah, first time I listened to it on my phone, I was like, ah, it's okay. Then I heard it in a car, and I was like, oh. I like it.
It's definitely a Travis Scott song.
Yes.
Like, it's his sound, for sure.
Yes. Kind of like high energy, moody.
Which is exactly how I describe Travis Scott.
Yeah. High energy but moody. Yeah. That's what the youths are into right now. Mm. They are happily loathing.
It's a vibe. They still say a vibe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a vibe. They don't say it's a vibe, but they say you vibe. Know the vibes.
The vibes, or, yeah.
You know, trying to catch a vibe. Stuff like that.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.